You're listening to Extra Time Radio.
In the Octagon, out in San Francisco, Matt, the armchair analyst, Doyle.
Do you like not care about your hygiene? Is that what we're hearing here?
I'm actually an obsessive hand washer.
They're maybe the best team in the MLS.
Wait a minute. No, Cashman, that's wrong.
Why?
Because, no, that's absolutely wrong.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from New York, you are listening to Extra Time Radio on SiriusXM FC Channel 85 and MLSsoccer.com. I am Andrew Wiebe. I am exhausted. I'm here with David Goss, of course, and Matt, the armchair analyst. Doyle out in San Francisco on, I think, even less sleep than us, Doyle. The MLS Cup playoffs, man, they're taking it out of me.
Yeah, well, it wasn't just about the late night. It was like once I put my head down on the pillow, it took me like 3 hours to kind of like dehype and be able to sleep. It was amazing.
Yeah, amped up. Seriously amped up. Let's see. We're going to go over all the action here today. We don't have any guests. We don't have time for it. It's also 10 o'clock in the morning on the East Coast.
It's a sleepy office, but I'm hyped.
Yeah, nobody's getting up, but that's because we were here until about 2:30 last night, jumping up and down in what I'm calling the most dramatic, the best, the most epic, I mean, just throw superlatives at it, penalty kick shootout of all time in MLS. I mean, 22 players did this thing for Portland and Kansas City. Portland moved on. We'll talk about that first. But then, of course, we'll hit that game in Seattle. Seattle-LA, the champs are down and out. And the Eastern Conference, plenty of drama there, too. Toronto FC Toronto FC'd and fell flat on their face in their first ever playoff appearance. And then DC United just feeding on our doubt, move on, setting up Atlantic Cup matchup in the conference semifinals.
I don't think there was a game that wasn't entertaining this round, and there's not a matchup going into the next round that's not exciting.
No, not at all. Look, you can go to MLSsoccer.com for all the coverage. I'm biased, but I think our guys, our girls, everybody involved absolutely killed it. We've got an instant replay for every game. We've got all the commentary you want from Doyle. We've got all the reaction from the coaches and the players. MLSsoccer.com/playoffs is where you can get it. Remember, Sunday, the first leg of the semifinals, the conference semifinals, all four games back to back to back to back, starting at 3 p.m. with New York Red Bulls and DC United at RFK Stadium, ending later in the day, FC Dallas, Seattle Sounders, all that good stuff in between. Let's start with this.
All four games on SiriusXM FC Channel 85.
Very, very
as
good
well.
Point. Very,
we
very
will
good
be,
point.
So we if you're road sandwiching
tripping,
that.
Right. So if you're road tripping,
You're listening right now to the pregame on SiriusXM FC, which is us.
It's coming up.
So get excited.
Get
pumped.
Let's start with the game that, I mean, I'm telling you, we were jumping up and down. It had a Beisler Panenka that went over the bar. It had a couple PKs from John Kempen and Adam Kwarasi. I mean, let's just start at the beginning. Doyle, the first 80 minutes, they weren't fun. That was not a great game for 80 minutes.
It wasn't the prettiest game ever, but I thought it was actually pretty well played in terms of what we saw tactically, especially from the Timbers. Their ability to sort of force Sporting to compress defensively because of where Nagby played, and then the ability to push guys up higher and into the attack, it worked. And it needs to be said, Matt Beisler was an absolute monster for about those first 75 or 80 minutes, sort of holding it all together. And then, with 10 or 15 minutes left in regulation, Portland just flattened out. They dropped their lines deep and they invited Sporting forward. Sporting had nothing, absolutely nothing before that time. And that's when things really started to get wild.
So you didn't mention it, but Rodney Wallace did get the goal in the 57th minute to put the Timbers up 1-0. And it looked like they're gonna waltz away with this thing. Yeah, they were hoofing it up there in the end of the game, but it didn't seem like Kansas City was going to take advantage. And then who else but Kevin Ellis? He has taken the baton from Lane Kalin as the Sporting KC defender that scores when you don't expect it, when they need it most. He did it again. He skies on a corner kick, a nice header inside the back post. Look, terrible marking from the Timbers. Set pieces, defensively, that's not been a place where they
and
can hang
their
hat. And
your DP, because when you Ridgewell. Watch the replay, every other Timber is engaged with the player that they're supposed to be marking. Kevin Ellis has 3 feet between him and Ridgewell. He makes a running leap. But I think irrelevant, and also irrelevant of the fact that Portland won, if you're a Portland fan, you have to be worried about the way that they turned around after scoring. Because I think a lot of that goes on Caleb Porter and the way that they sat back and allowed KC back into a game that they were dominating possession in. Mm-hmm. And I know Matt was saying tactically, but that's the way both those teams have played over the last few weeks. So it wasn't really anything like – it wasn't like either coach really pulled anything out of
bag. This was – tactically, this is what Porter's teams have done all 3 years.
Right.
Once they have a lead – They tend to sit and flatten out, and they're not great at doing that. And they need to be the type of team that once they have one goal, they have to be even more amped up to go for number two because they can't defend deep like that.
And on top of that, when they have their moment, they had 30 minutes of domination in the first half and they didn't score. They can't play that amount of time up on a team, especially in the playoffs where you have these two legs, and not score goals.
Well, we'll talk about that when we get to Vancouver. Let's talk about this game because this all popped off in the 87th minute. I mentioned Kevin Ellis. Christian Nemeth gets a goal later on in this one, and then Max Rudy gets the tying goal in the 118th minute. But part of the drama in this game is that a lot of these guys that played large roles probably shouldn't have been on the field. Kevin Ellis gets very fortunate, I think, to not be sent off for a tackle over the ball on Diego Valeri. This thing was studs up. He's coming in hard. That certainly endangers the opponent on that one. And then Christian Nemeth kicks a ball in the face of a player on the ground. I think both of those are red cards. Both of those guys score the goals. Red cards? No, yes. Am I channeling Simon Borg here? I mean, what's the
deal? Yes, I think they were both red cards, and I think that's something that the league has come to expect from Sporting KC. They're really good at making the game physical over the years. Now this team can play a little bit too, for sure, and they don't always do it, but they clearly intended to set a tone, and it's been one of their calling cards since about 2010.
Yeah, 48 fouls combined here, 9 yellow cards, a couple of infractions on the Timbers side too. They're not innocent bystanders in this whole thing. Rodney Wallace catching Tim Melia right in the face, a nice gash. He argues a little bit, it looked like, had a long discussion with the trainer, ended up staying in the game, then came out for John Kempen, who would then play hero. And goat's not the right word. It was an incredible performance from Kempen, but the fact of the matter is it was his PK that was saved that gave Portland the win. And then Fernando Adi catching Matt Beisler in the face with an elbow. There's not a great replay on this one. It did
Beisler
look like
gushing blood.
Yeah, that was a Halloween moment right there. It didn't look intentional, but really the only view we had was live, wide angle. It looked like he's turning around to get the ball as they're going for a long ball into the box. Either way, Sporting Kansas City not happy with that.
Box score, 48 fouls combined between these two teams, 9 yellow cards. Yep. It could have been more as well. I mean, that's – when you say setting a tone physically.
Yeah.
And Portland went there every step of the way with them. So I think for Portland, you have to be happy that you didn't back down. Although you don't want to be chippy.
Now, those yellow cards are going to set up for that semifinal round. If you get 2, remember, you're suspended. So that's something to watch in the first leg against Vancouver. Let's go to the penalty shootout. Like the goals, there's a lot to talk about there, but the drama really continued in the shootout. There were some bad PKs. There were a lot of good PKs. What was the marquee moment in this one for you, Dave? What was the moment that you'll sit back and remember, you know, when you talk about this game? Because let's be honest, the years gone by, we're going to talk about this game.
I think there's only one moment that's going to pop up, and that's a chance to win it and hitting the post twice in one shot. I've never seen that on a penalty kick in my life. Just going to sudden death PKs is the essence of drama anyway. Mm-hmm. And for that to happen, it kind of at that moment was like, I don't think Sporting KC is going to win this. Up until that point, I thought they were going to.
Yeah.
They were shooting second. They just done it in US Open Cup. They've done it before in MLS Cup playoffs, of course. Kempen makes the first save. On the first shot, Kempen makes
a
save.
Great save.
You're up from there on. Then
he's using the little piece of paper, too, beforehand. Straight out of the Jimmy Nielsen school of penalty kick goalkeeping.
With the bleached hair as
He learned under Jimmy.
Yeah, and then it was chaos, moment after moment. My phone, like, people are texting me, And I think people were on different times because of the Univision feed as on the online feed as well. And my one friend couldn't figure out who was shooting first and who was shooting second because it was so chaotic and it just continued and continued. But that has to be
it. That's got to be it. That's what the one that's making the round on the blogs today. Matt Beisler with a Panenka that he missed in this game. I mean,
That one's still going.
I didn't know that Beisler had that kind of PK swag, Matt, but wow. Did the right team win, though? Before we move on, did the team that deserved the result win, or is this just, you know, the soccer gods throwing a couple dice and whatever comes out on top moves on?
I think it was more the soccer gods tossing the dice than anything else. And look, don't take anything away from the Timbers there. Corase made some great saves, and Urruti came in and did what he does and punished a sort of a sleeping defense. But it would not have been necessarily unjust if Sporting had moved on. But hey, it's, you know, that's why you play for home field advantage. That's why the regular season matters.
And that's why the Vancouver Whitecaps have to be licking their chops. Short rest for the Portland Timbers. They are going to host this game, but they're going to do it, on about 3 days rest here, plus a 120-minute game ahead of them. That game's on Sunday, of course, 5 p.m. Eastern, ESPN, ESPN Deportes, and TSN in Canada. Dave, how big of an advantage is this for the Whitecaps? And can they look at this game? How do they approach it? Do you come out and try to punch Portland in the face, try to drive it home, or are you pragmatic?
I think you're pragmatic. Because I think Portland, they're going to – listen, even though it's short rest, they don't have to travel. You know that the crowd's going to be behind them. You know they're going to be up for the game if they can get Chara back in any sort of way. That's a huge boost. I don't know if that's going to happen. I don't know.
Yeah, we haven't even mentioned it. No Chara.
Yeah, which was I thought was a major factor because I think it doesn't allow Nagbe to be as attacking as he could be. But I think for Vancouver, you allow Portland to kind of run themselves out a little bit. You know you can hit them on the counter one-on-one. I think Alvis Powell was exposed again last night, Christian Nemeth. I mean, no one's going to stop that Nemeth goal, but he cuts back on him. He gets the opportunity. Dwyer had his opening. So there were chances there. There was leaks in the defense a little bit, and I think if Vancouver can take advantage of one or two chances on the break, they're the away team. They only need to get a goal, really, and they're set going home.
And they're the best away team record-wise in MLS. Matt, what do the Timbers do? How do they approach this one? This is a little bit of a conundrum for them, I think.
It is, and it goes back to Chara when he was in the, you know, playing as a true defensive midfielder those last three games. He was completing 94% of his passes, passing the ball 60 times a game. Everything was running through him in sort of a Beckerman-esque fashion. It was Jack Jewsbury in that role last night, a different kind of player, and he completed about 70% of his passes. Those are a lot of changes of possession coming from central midfield, and really the only time Vancouver is dangerous in the run of play these days is when possession is changing quickly in central midfield. So I that's a canary in a coal mine sort of stat that I think the Timbers have to be aware of, and we'll see if Chara is healthy, that ups Portland's chances of getting a result in this one considerably.
Portland, they changed their starting lineup. We've talked about it a lot over the last 3 weeks. Lucas Milano was tough to watch again yesterday, whiffing on an opportunity in the box. Asprilla then comes off the bench and has the assist on the goal. I'd be interested to see if Caleb Porter actually looks at changing that up a little bit, bringing even more speed into that starting lineup.
I think he'd be nuts to change that up because as frustrating as Milano is in front of goal, his ability to stretch the field both vertically and horizontally makes them as a whole, I think, tougher to defend. And plus, he's a DP. You got to give the guy who you brought in to make a difference more of a chance to make a difference.
Hey, look, we got a fun matchup coming up on Sunday. We have four fun matchups, but Cascadia Cup in the playoffs, no matter how these knockout rounds went, was going to be Seattle or Portland after Seattle won, of course, for Vancouver. So that's one to lick your chops over. 5 p.m. Eastern, ESPN, ESPN Deportes, TSN. On the other side of the bracket in the Western Conference is going to be FC Dallas, Seattle. That's a rematch from last year's conference semifinals. Of course, the Sounders moved on. This one's at 9:30 p.m. Eastern, FS1, Fox Deportes, TSN in Canada. The way this shaped up here is because the Sounders handled business home. They got over Mount Galaxy. This was another wild and crazy win here.
This was the game. Coming out of this game, everyone said that's the craziest game of the year. And then one day later, Portland SKC
won
up.
That didn't have a long half-life on it, did it? The Galaxy are out. We will not be going back to L.A. There will not be another L.A. team lifting the cup, which would have been, what, 4 in 5 years, which – I mean, I snore. I mean, I'm sorry, but I want something different here. Sorry, guys.
Clearly, Donovan Ricketts did as well.
Clearly, Donovan Ricketts did as well. Doyle, 3-2 win for Seattle. I'm not gonna go out on a limb because those three goals, those weren't necessarily by virtue of incredible attacking play. That wasn't Deuce and Oba just running amok. A lot of that, as Bruce Arena said, was Christmas come early.
Yeah, I mean, if Lampard signing was the worst transaction of the year, then dumping Pinedo and bringing in Ricketts was a close number two. Because if it's Pinedo in there, we're talking about the possibility of another trip to L.A. Ricketts fumbled the first, arguably at fault on the second, though I think that was more Gerrard. And then the third was he comes running off his line, gets nowhere near the ball, slips, doesn't get back. And Freiburg sticks the knife in. It was disastrous from him. It was pretty close to disastrous from Gonzalez, Leonardo, and Steven Gerrard just didn't show up. So it was not a great combo for the Galaxy on the night.
And even the second goal they gave up, which I agree is on Gerrard, he has to follow his marker.
And for him to then put his arms out and yell at Ricketts. I mean, I understand you're frustrated, but look, that the ball at that trajectory from Ivanchitz, he cannot get that.
But I think it's an example of the chaos that's going on with Ricketts in goal, is that no one knows what's going on behind them. Yeah. And I think that's the most important part for a goalkeeper, is just allowing a sense of security of what's going to happen and what's not.
Safety
know their
plugin,
limitations.
Yeah.
You don't with him. Not to go too far into revisionist history, but not even just Pineda, if it's Pineda and Sarvas in that rather than Gerrard and Ricketts. Because it was a weak center midfield for Seattle in this game. No Ozzie Alonso, no Pineda. They start Andy Rose, and it wasn't
I kind of like Andy Rose. I mean,
everyone says it to me, and I don't care. I don't care. He's a great guy. I enjoy watching him play off the bench, but I don't care. Everyone always says that to me. But it should be an area where LA dominates. It shouldn't be an area where LA's 50-50. That should be where they won that game, and they couldn't do that. And that allowed Seattle to win the games in the areas where they could, which was the two players on the wing and the two players.
The chemistry just not right in that midfield for LA. They have some serious question marks to go over. I mean, it's not right in attack in large parts either, Matt. Giovanni Dos Santos, this didn't come off for him. Again, the winner in this game, before we get too far down the line, Eric Freiburg, a beautiful volley, but this was on the play where, Donovan Ricketts is like staring up at the rafters, two comedy of errors clearances from AJ De La Garza and Leonardo, a great strike by Freiburg, but oh boy, this was not a good night to be an LA Galaxy fan. Now they take on FC Dallas, Matt, and this is a rematch of last year. They're going to be in Seattle, if I remember correctly last year. No, that game I think was in Dallas when Dallas mucked it up. But Dallas's track record this year on the road, big games, need a result, is to go in and just shut the game down. Do they do that with their special Argentine unicorn and Mauro Diaz healthy, or do they go out and try to get this one?
I think they go out and they try to get this one. I think last year in that playoff round against Seattle, I think they were without Diaz in the first game. And because he had been hurt most of the second half of the season and only came back in the knockout round against Vancouver. And so it's a different sort of rubric they're using this year. Diaz is healthy. He's influential every game. They know that they can go out and play. My question with Dallas is their finishing. David Teixeira really only scores against kind of the lousier teams in the league. He doesn't do it against good teams. Blas Perez is kind of past it. And it's just looking at it on paper, do you pick the team with David Teixeira up top or the team with Clint Dempsey and Obafemi Martins?
And so I was looking back at the results. Seattle went 1-0-1 in this matchup this year. The last game, though, was June 14th. No Teixeira, no Barrios. They hadn't really cracked the lineup for FC Dallas. Mm-hmm. It was also the game before Dempsey rips up the notebook in the U.S. Open Cup, which is kind of when it all started to go insane for Seattle. It hadn't been perfect up until that point.
Can we get a meme video of the notebook with starring Dempsey?
Yeah, absolutely.
Can I just make that a
just crying in
right
the
now?
Rain.
I know it's a little bit late, but come on.
So there's really like no rubric for this, and like Doyle said, it was different last year. The only thing I'd say in terms of those matchups offensively and defensively is Leo Gonzalez goes out hurt. So if they're going to start Zach Scott and Chad Marshall with Brad Evans at left back and no Ozzie
Alonso. Evans pulled up late clutching his hamstring. Right. He looked like he was in some serious pain.
Yeah, I talked to some people involved in that game who said, yeah, he's really hurt. So we might not even see Brad Evans.
That's a huge loss.
And no Ozzie Alonso, there's the opportunity there to attack. Although, if O'Neal Fisher starts, he's got a lot more speed to keep up with those FC Dallas players.
I'm not sure it matters how fast you are with Barrios and Castillo on those wings. A big game, a big matchup. The Western Conference is set. We'll have a new representative in the final this year. Like I said, no LA Galaxy. This game, 9:30 p.m. Eastern, Fox Sports 1, Fox Deportes TSN. What's up?
Stefan Fry comes on the show. He says Nelson Valdez will be an X factor. Valdez gets the goal.
You asked that question.
I love Stefan Fry.
Oh, yeah. Over here,
Valdez gets the offside goal. Let's call it like it is. He was a half a step offside. That was a bad call.
Doyle is the Andy Rose of this show.
Yeah,
right
he is. I had a ton of Sounders fans when I tweeted out that screen grab saying, look, his feet are onside. I'm like, boy. Boy, you guys are really reaching on that one. Let's go to the Eastern Conference. When we come back, we'll go over it all. Some sketchy calls maybe in D.C. We'll find out what the guys think.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at mlssoccer.com or tweet at extratime radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Hoi Ali, ich bin Stefan, ich bin goalie for the Seattle Sounders und ihr hört momentan extratime radio.
Back now on Extra Time Radio with the guys, Dave Goss from the Octagon out in, Berkeley, is it? Oakland. Matt, the armchair analyst, Doyle, all these West Coast neighborhoods got me confused here. We're on to the Eastern Conference, though.
Can I leave that up so we could talk
about
that?
Yeah, we can. You know
why
time? That's up? You'll find out why that's up, because Frank Underwood is a massive DC United fan. He's first name tweeting Ben Olsen out here with rocket ship emojis and the like. So we'll talk about that here in just a second. But we're going to start up in Canada. Yeah, bring it in. Yeah, I'm vibing.
That would make our show so much cooler.
It would. By the way, I'm sitting here in a Kansas City Royals hat, and and Goss is.
Why would you bring that up?
It's been tough for you. I just want to acknowledge. You know,
been tough for me. A series doesn't start until a home team loses. So. Let's go.
Okay. Yeah. Hasn't started yet, apparently, then. But in Canada, the home team won, as did all the home teams in the knockout round, 4-4.
Which shows you regular season home field advantage matter.
It matters. And now these top seeds are catching them on short rest. Montreal,
or it just means that the better teams are home, and therefore they're the better teams, and they win anyway.
Yeah. Who knows what it means? Let's get a little bit larger data set before we start making assumptions here. Montreal 3, Toronto nothing. Toronto FC's back line. Once again, they're undoing, but the attack didn't do much in this game either. Piatti and Drogba, they were the catalysts. They were the ones that drove this game forward as a team. Doyle, Montreal, just simply better on the night. Really a shocking performance for Toronto. In a matter of 20 minutes, the game was basically over. You could see the wind go out of their sails. I don't know. I can't even remember a moment from Jovinko in this game. No. What happened?
Yeah, he had like a 30-yard free kick in the second half, but that was about it. This is why teams over the last 10 years have sort of evolved into preferring the 4-3-3 as opposed to the 4-4-2. Because when you have a good cohesive mix in midfield and up top, you can dominate meaningful possession through that central midfield, and you could change where the game is played and the tempo it's played at easier in a 4-3-3. It doesn't mean that the 4-3-3 is right for every group of guys, but clearly it's right for Montreal, and clearly Toronto FC had no answers, and clearly if Greg Vanney had to do all over again, he is not going to start Jackson at right back. They just went at him all day and annihilated him.
Yep, first goal, he's waving, you know, I don't know what he's doing. Well, I'm trying to like describe it in a way that's not just going to crush
him. Oh, he's caught
in
an island in midfield, and rather than make the effort to sprint back and try and defend, he makes a half-hearted step in the middle of midfield and gets beat. But we have
you
to say.
You did much better than I did describing
you.
That.
We have to say, and we've not discussed it enough, that Josh Williams, who was cut by NYCFC, who had a poor defense this year, started at center back for TFC.
And he had some good moments with Toronto.
Okay. But he's like
the Toronto Andy Rose.
No. Because I agree he had some good moments, and there are guys that don't fit in some teams that fit in others, or guys that coaches that get it wrong. But that's what they were playing with. And that's what happened. They didn't look like a competent MLS defense in this game. And Piatti recognized what was going on in front of him and attacked it. And if Jackson's going to start at fullback, which I actually haven't hated him at, he has to.
There's a vote of confidence.
Yeah. Yeah. He's good with his back to goal. It's the backhanded compliment. Yeah. He has to be the one pinning the opposing midfielder back. He has to be attacking so that his defense is that Piatti is in his own half when he picks up the ball. Jackson didn't do that. He didn't do that at all. They didn't have enough possession to allow him to at times, maybe. And Josie Altidore was absolutely invisible in this game.
Completely anonymous.
Even more than Giovinco was.
Yeah, so Ahmed Kantari taken off at halftime by Greg Vanney. Greg Vanney maybe should have taken the suit he was wearing off at halftime. I kind of liked it, but I thought it was maybe a strong play here in this elimination game on the road, kind of the crushed deep red velvet and the all-black.
I'm glad we're here.
Night in the Roxbury suit.
Yeah, there's some Roxbury aspects to that. After this game, there were clips that came out of Sebastian Giovinco getting in a confrontation with fans. Doyle, put this in some perspective for me. If you're a Toronto fan, if you're paying attention to that league, not that league, that team, how does the season end? What kind of taste do you have in your mouth? Yes, you got your first ever playoff appearance, but it's basically a disappointing footnote. It's certainly not a moment of glory.
Well, there was year-over-year growth. So you have to take that sort of wide-angle view at first, and then you have to understand that they were left over with a lot of contracts from 2013 and 2014 that they didn't necessarily want to have in 2015. And they have, I will say this, they have a ton of guys coming off the books for this offseason. So I would expect them to go for a big, biggish name, experienced central defender, and I would expect them to try to do something about right back. And I would expect them to try to work themselves into a 4-3-3 next year, because I think it's the best setup for both Josie and Giovinco. And I think it's the type of thing that can sort of highlight Michael Bradley's strengths while minimizing his weaknesses. But they need to shop, and they need to get the acquisitions right, and they don't have a great track record of that at the moment.
I would just seconding Doyle. If I'm a TFC fan, I know you waited 9 years, and it was an upsetting way to go out in 35 minutes.
To your rival, too. That's part
right.
of the problem here.
But, one, you just see what Montreal did from their turnaround. And also, like Doyle said, there's a lot of openings and opportunities to get the right pieces, because you haven't had the base to build around at TFC. And now you have those three guys. You have Osorio as well. So you know the holes you have to fill. It's not just plugging holes into a blank canvas.
Yep. Some perhaps more better times ahead for Toronto FC. We know they've got the players here, and I'm going to guess that Giovinco is going to take that Landon Donovan MVP award. So they'll get some plaudits out of this season. But it's over for them. The Impact are moving on. They've shown this year in knockout tournaments they're pretty dang good. They're going to take on the Columbus Crew SC that game Sunday at the Impact in Stade Saputo, 7 p.m. Eastern, FS1, Fox Deportes, TSN in Canada, of course, right here on SiriusXM FC, Channel 85. The Crew will give up goals. There's no doubt about that. They do not have a lockdown defense. Didier Drogba, if anybody is going to lead somebody like that. And look, Drogba, Piatti may be the best 1-2 in the league. Doyle, do you think the Crew are ripe for one here, or is this their series to lose?
Well, I mean, I picked Montreal to actually win the whole damn thing, so I kind of have to stick with that. But I'm going to challenge that first point you made. The Crew are they've won their last two games by a combined 7-0, and they've looked a much better defensive team with Gaston Saro in there. So I think that this isn't necessarily destined to be sort of a high scoring back and forth affair like their trip to the playoffs last year was. I think Columbus have looked a little bit more mature down the stretch, and we do know that they can they can create some danger and attack. So I actually think this is going to be a really good series.
I do. I agree. I'm just going to say two games does not a lockdown defense make. And I think in one of those games, Gaston Sorrow was lucky not to get sent off. So,
but I think that's why I was highlighting the fact that Josh Williams started for TFC. Even though Columbus might have a not as strong defense, it's still an MLS competent defense with Michael Parker.
I'm sorry, I just can't help but laugh every time you say competent. MLS competent. It just sounds like, well, you know, their clown car only fits 10 clowns. It's not a 20-car clown.
But one of the things, and I was reading an article with Berhalter, and he said last year they gave up the goals to New England, and they tried to push and score a lot, and they lost their shape. And he said specifically
they pretty much ran themselves out of that series.
Right, and he said specifically on Tuesday, a 1-0 loss in the first game isn't the end of the world. You can come back from that. A 4-2 loss at home puts you in a tough spot. I think the mentality is more pragmatic. I think the players who were there last year understand they don't need to even win in Montreal. They just need to make sure that they have an opportunity to go home and still be in this series in front of their home crowd when they get the energy and they get the opportunity. So I think you're going to see a more intelligent approach from Columbus either way. And Montreal is the team that every single MLS fan that I'm friends with that roots for different teams texts me over the last 2 days and is like, I don't want to play Montreal. They are the scariest team in the league right now, especially Red Bulls fans, but I'm hearing it from Seattle fans and Dallas fans as well. So no one wants to see that team. And now Columbus has to play them.
So, Doyle, what are the matchups that we're watching in this one? Because I look at both these lineups, and they both have a number of difference makers. Guys, especially 1v1, that can make you look silly. What are the key matchups here if you're looking at this tactically? Is it whoever matches up with Ethan Finlay? Is it that just that right side in general with the crew coming down? How does the left side of the Montreal defense handle that? Where are you looking?
I think both right backs. I think what we saw from Piatti last night with him on the left wing, we can expect him to start there again. And so how Harrison Offal handles that, he's a much smarter player than Jackson, so I don't think he's going to end up stranding himself. But Piatti's really freaking good, so you know he'll have to be on point. And then on the other side, Justin Merrim is one of the best in the league at one of the best wingers in the league at cutting inside. Yep. And sort of drawing that opposing fullback into him and then slipping his own overlapping fullback, which would be Waylon Francis, down the flank to whip in crosses. And that is how Kai Kamara goes to town. So Oyongo is going to have to be really, really good and smart about when and where he steps to Miram. And Oyongo has some talent, but he's not the most sophisticated player out there. So that is an area I think the crew can do some work.
One of the exciting matchups, strength to strength, is Kamara versus Simon. Just that battle in the air. I mean, that's what you pay to come to the playoffs, see those guys play at a high level. And then in midfield, I'm interested to see Rio Coker and Bernier are not the youngest players.
No, I was just about to say this to you. This is like old man midfield, right, versus young man midfield. Yeah. We didn't mention this. Patrice Bernier opened the scoring against Toronto FC, which is a great story. If you haven't been following this year, he's kind of been at odds with the Impact front office. He's a Montreal guy through and through. We've had him on this show before.
Played a very in the A-League for them.
Yeah, a very thoughtful guy. But he has not been happy. He gets a start in this game. He gets a goal.
And an assist.
Old man midfield versus young man midfield. Who has the edge?
I think irrelevant. I think Columbus has the edge. It's just whether or not Montreal, those players can even turn around after a midweek. Do they maybe go to a Calamalis and try and weather the storm and then bring Bernier or Rio Coker back in as a late sub or in for the next leg rather than risk something happening to them and losing mm-hmm. them for the playoff run. So that's going to be interesting because Chani can dominate a game. And he has done it off and on through his career, more, of course, in Columbus than he did before. But if you let him roam free, he will create enough openings that'll be enough for Columbus to get whatever result they need on the road.
I can't wait for this one because we know Chani's got it. He's got a little bit of a mouth on him sometimes. There's going to be some talking going on. This one has some real potential. Kremis Kura SC at the Montreal Impact going down on Sunday, of course, 7 p.m. Eastern, FS1, Fox Deportes, TSN. On the other side in the East, DC United, who I'm just going to keep on talking stuff. I'm going to doubt them because that is how they're going to make a run to MLS Cup. They feed on this stuff. It's like, you know, this is like the midichlorians. This is how they get. See, I just dropped the Star Wars reference. I don't know if it worked that well, but This is where they draw their power.
Star Wars reference.
What was that?
I said you dropped the worst Star Wars reference.
Well, it was something, wasn't it? It was something. Look, they get past. They get past the Revs, and the Revs, it looked like they were going to get this done because Juan Agudelo scored maybe the best playoff goal, maybe the best goal ever in MLS. An incredible flying bicycle kick over the shoulder, over Bill Hamid, which is downright incredible in itself. It didn't last for them. DC United 2-1 winners on the night. They'd missed a penalty in this one. Chris Rolfe hit the post. I think left posts are doing a bang-up job this postseason.
No, right. Oh, never mind. Sorry.
Well, yeah.
If you're looking at the shooter, yeah.
Depends on your perspective. But the big call in this one that had a lot of people riled up, especially Jermaine Jones, was the non-call in stoppage time, the handball or non-handball, however you want to call it, on Sean Franklin in the box. Our own Thomas Rongen said, not a handball. You remember you can watch all the pregame shows here at MLSsoccer.com to get ready for all the action. What do you guys think? Was this a handball? Jermaine Jones, he assaulted Mark Geiger.
I think it was like a 20% call. Like, it, you know how some calls are 50-50? Like, mm-hmm. The Scott Caldwell one was, I think, 50-50 because Caldwell was a little further away.
That's part of the controversy. And I think, this happened earlier in the game.
Yes. I think that was a 50-50 call. The Franklin one was like a 20-80 call. I would have been shocked if it had been given in normal circumstances. And at the end of the game like that, no way. I actually thought Geiger did a really good job that game. So
I agree with Doyle on both calls. And irrelevant, your DP can't run 25 yards. I mean, the moment the play happens, he just starts sprinting at Geiger. And you can see it on TV. It's straight red card from the start of that, I think.
He lost it, yep.
And then he continues to lose it. That's unacceptable. But we can't overlook Bill Hamid. I mean, the moment Agudelo scored, he was under fire. Bobby Shuttleworth made a lot of big saves as well. The posts once again came up as stars in knockout round. But Bill Hamid kept them in the game. When they played New York, and they're going to go on to play New York at 3 p.m. Eastern
Atlantic
time.
Cup.
On ESPN, Vamos. Atlantic Cup. When they played them in earlier this season on national TV, they got blown off the field at 3-0, and Bill Hamid stood on his head. So I don't know what he has to do to get them through this series. They're going to have to tighten up somehow in transition to not allow New York to run rampant, but Bill Hamid has been unbelievable at times this season.
Yep, an absolute wall for DC United. I think it was Ben Olsen who said, look, other teams got Jovinko, other teams have Kamara, Drogba, we got Bill Hamid. And that explains a lot about DC United's success and sometimes the way they play. It's not always pretty. I know that, and I know that I've been maybe I've said a lot of things on this show essentially doubting them, and they continue to prove me wrong. We'll see if they can do that again against the Red Bulls. Doyle, any trepidation on your part? You're a Metros fan from way back in the day. If there is anything that's so Metro, it's winning the Supporters' Shield, running away, being favorites for the MLS Cup, and then losing in the most ugly way possible to DC United, right?
I mean, yeah, I mean, I think that's what happened in 2013, right? Houston. They lost Houston in 2013. The big loss to DC United was in 2012. Regardless, I think DC United with a healthy Fabian Espíndola is a team, is a much better team than the DC United that sort of muddled through the second half of this year. Espíndola is their difference maker. We saw it on both goals. He's always an outlet. His movement is really, really intelligent. And he's the type of guy who can give you some pause with your high pressure. Because if you turn the ball over in a bad spot, he's going to know exactly how to be an outlet for his team. And then, bam, DC United's on the break. And that is an area where the Red Bulls have had trouble.
Dax McCarty saying this week, ahead of knowing that this is the matchup because it was before Thursday night's game, that he heard Fabi say he wanted the Red Bulls, and Dax speculated that that's because he wanted to trade jerseys with them after some teammates. Dax McCarty, a shining light in the media area. A shining light in the media area right now is Kevin Spacey, who's apparently a big DC United fan. He went to their training. Like I said, he's name-dropping Ben Olsen on Twitter. He's hyped. He's pumped. He's ready for this matchup. I think John Wall might go to this game.
Nope.
Marcin Gortat, if you're an NBA fan, they're getting some wizards out there. The Red Bulls, what do they need to do in this game? They go to RFK, Dave. You just do the same old,
it's
same old?
Very, very simple. You do exactly what you've done. And you do exactly what you did to them last time. You showed that you're probably quicker player for player as long as you don't give them good free kick opportunities around the box, which is what they got themselves back in on against New England, then this is the toughest series that I could see an upset in, I think, across the four that we have.
You think it's unlikely?
I think it's unlikely. And what, of course, we've questioned DC the entire time, and they've continued to prove us wrong. So that probably is good news for them. But New York seems to understand what they want to do very well. That's why they won Supporter Shield. They seem to be comfortable in their positions. They're healthy coming into this. They got a little bit of a rest. They beat them last year, and they were less comfortable in their and how they were playing last year. So I think it'll be tough for DC. I think they'll need a huge performance from De Leon once again, and a huge performance from Chris Rolfe on top of what Espinola gives them to be able to turn this around.
Some serious playoff
this. And maybe no Chris Pontius for this one as well. Yep. He has been a big piece for them over the last couple of weeks, but he limped off against the Revs. Which is a shame. He just can't stay healthy.
Nope, he cannot. Too bad for him right now. We'll see if he's healthy. We'll see if Bobby Boswell plays in this one as well. There was a little bit of controversy at the end of this game, or I should say in the 70-some minute when, I think 69 maybe? I don't know. Either way, he got a yellow card for an off-the-ball incident with Juan Agudelo, and after the game, Agudelo leveled some pretty serious charges, calling it a cheap shot, saying he came out of nowhere and did what he could essentially to take him out. Boswell saying, hey, it's just one of those plays. We were battling all game. We'll have to see what happens with that. I didn't see a replay on this, so I'm not sure exactly what happened, but certainly these guys at odds over what exactly happened.
At New England, my preseason MLS Cup picks, I have to say that and put that there.
But,
Doyle, what happened there? What, real quick before we go, what's the story for New England going into the offseason?
I think maturity along the back line. Andrew Farrell was absolutely abused in this one. From the run of play and on set pieces, and that's part of the learning experience. You know, this is his first year as a central defender at this level, and he had to take his lumps. And the other thing is, they need to figure out what Juan Agudelo is, because he had that absolutely amazing goal, and then he disappeared. And this is what, his sixth or seventh year as a pro right now. He should be beyond that. And the fact that he isn't, maybe makes him a tradable asset, because I don't think you can count on him to be the guy who game in, game out over the course of the season, is a difference maker for your team.
Well, there you have it.
Despite
all his talents. Revs fans, let us know what you think. DC fans, Montreal fans, Toronto fans, Columbus. Down the line, we want to know what your thoughts are on the knockout round and headed into the conference semifinals. Remember, all those games on Sunday, it's back to back to back to back. It's one of those fun MLS days where you're just going to camp out and –
And what's so decision day and knockout rounds, we can say, have been an utter success.
Yeah.
They've been insanity.
It's been fun.
But now you get to watch every single game.
Right.
They're not on top of each other. You don't have to. I love the energy of there's a goal here, there's a goal here, there's a goal here. But these are all great matchups, and we're going to get to sit down and watch them all play out back to back to back. So I am going to be gorged at the end of the night, but it's going to be delightful.
Yeah, you're going to have to unbutton a button. Unbutton
Thanksgiving
your MLS button,
style
top
early.
Button. Yeah, let us know how you consume all of this. Starting at 3 p.m., New York, D.C., then at 5, Vancouver, Portland, at 7, Columbus, Montreal, and then FC Dallas and the Seattle Sounders ending the night. Let's get out of here. Let's go to the mailbag. We got plenty of thoughts from the fans. Let's do it.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at mlssoccer.com or tweet at extratime radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Oi, Ali, it's Stefan, the goalie for the Seattle Sounders on the Lost Momentan Extratime Radio.
You ever going to talk over
it? No. I want to just let it play. Back now on Extra Time Radio on SiriusXM FC Channel 85. We'll get to why we're playing Rammstein in just a second. But remember, all four of those MLS Cup playoff games, the conference semifinals, the first legs, all of them right here. SiriusXM FC, Channel 85. All the coverage, MLSsoccer.com. The reason why we're playing Rammstein. Das Reboot, we're doing the book club. It's back. We had mentioned it. I also have four copies of the book to give out. You can buy it on Amazon as well. $12.28 with Prime shipping. That's pretty good.
It's phenomenal. It's really, really well written. It's really interesting. I think even there's a lot of different soccer fans who will be interested by
written
it.
Written by Raphael Hogenstein, Das Reboot, How German Soccer Reinvented Itself and Conquered the World. Let's conquer the mailbag. What do we got, Dave?
Well, for starters, I hope Raphael, however we're pronouncing it, has better German music.
We're going to have to ask him we need suggestions.
So you already said in the last segment, but Henry Thomas could not wait to hear the poop emoji that you're going to do all over DC United for the 43rd time this season.
Oh, Henry Thomas, you're like, you're not really my favorite troll, but you're a troll.
But we hit him. We gave him exactly what he wanted. I picked against them. I said there's no way that they can come back. We have a lot of Portland Timbers fans who were on a high last night. Larry Shaw says behind eight ball, three separate times, double post, goalkeeper heroics. Matt, at this point, it's just hashtag destiny for Portland, right?
I guess. I mean, I don't know if I buy that yet. I need to see what happens. I'm not a big believer in destiny.
Hashtag
blessed for sure, though. I have Portland Montreal in my kind of throwaway bracket over there, so hopefully,
how many brackets do you have?
Just the one, but I didn't really try that hard.
Well, we saw from Caleb Porter his comments about Timbers Army, and Ethan Simi here, who was at the game, says Timbers Army just off the wall. I've never been involved in something so insane, stressful, and incredible. I think you could see that on TV. The atmosphere was top notch. The PK shootout happening right in front of Nat Borchers with the salute. Okay, I'm not a fan.
Come on,
by the way,
that salute was that was a little much.
No, I don't think the salute was much, but Max Arruti, you don't get a celebration after every PK shot, right? You get one after the winner.
Yeah, of course. Well, that's what I'm saying. Why Borchers, they missed their first. Like, he needs to, he got saved. No salute there.
Right, but the salute's so smooth.
You do
so
that after you
quicker.
Win it. If you win it and you salute, that's legit, but you're talking about the Timbers Army in the stadium. I was getting text messages from all my friends in Kansas City, my brother. This was like, this was agony for them. Pictures of people just like chewing through their arm. They were so nervous.
Well, fortunately,
tough week here for people in Kansas City. Lots of playoffs, right, Dave?
Fortunately,
you working on your song, by the way.
Fortunately, those Sporting KC fans didn't tweet you any sort of negative tweets because Luis Hernandez says hashtag We Be Cursed strikes again. We do remember that Sporting KC, when they had their upturn in the middle of the summer, you went on and said that they were Supporter Shield favorites, and now
they piping
were
hot
the last seed in, and they lost. Matt, we got one from Sean Tucker. Kind of refreshing to have a playoff series without KC or LA. Kind of getting bored of watching those guys win everything. Agreement there?
The most recent team of the group left to win MLS Cup is the Crew in 2008. And the last of the group of the teams that are left, the last team to even make MLS Cup was Dallas in 2010. I think it's great. I think it's fantastic to see a new group in there and kind of a new era, you know, with Donovan retiring and Henry retiring, and well, not that he had much say on MLS Cup, but you know, and RSL kind of falling apart. It's kind of opened the door a little bit. And yeah, it's fun. It's nice for other fan bases to get to experience it. But we'll see if we feel that way when it's, you know, 42 degrees and snowing in Dallas as opposed to 77 and mostly sunny in LA for MLS Cup.
Six out of the eight teams have not won it. DC and Columbus, the only two. DC's last in 2004. So odds are we will get a new champion. Maybe even one from Canada. Two teams in.
Bob and Kathy Berger say only game as good as Sporting KC Timbers was San Jose Earthquakes comeback win over the LA Galaxy to reach and win MLS Cup. Putting that one in pretty high. I think the excitement and energy level was off the charts.
Yeah.
I don't know that. I guess those types of games, the quality isn't really going to shine because it's so chaotic.
We had a conversation here in the office, Matt. Simon saying that he wasn't seeing a lot of quality in these playoffs. And, you know, I was disagreeing to a certain extent with him and also pointing out that, you know, the entertainment value was sky high How do you feel about that statement quickly? Because we obviously have more to get to here.
I disagree with Simon. I actually thought there was some really good inventive play and some smart tactical play from a number of coaches. I don't know what more you would ask for on short rest in a knockout game. Usually these situations produce sort of drab and cagey soccer, and it's been anything but.
I actually have to agree with Simon, and I think it's an interesting point. But let's move on, because we still have a lot of other teams who still have stuff to think about, even if they're not in the playoffs. Luis Hernandez, big fan of the show, fan of Orlando City, and he said he enjoyed his first season, but now it's his first offseason, and he wants to know what, as a suffering Orlando City fan, what does he have to look for now? When's the preseason begin? What are some MLS things to look forward to? Of course, he's going to watch the playoffs, but he doesn't have his team in it. So I'm wondering for you guys, what's that moment, the spring training for baseball, the NFL draft, that you turned on and MLS is going
Fans are getting pretty entitled, huh? Like, come on, you almost made the playoffs. You had a great season. You packed the stadium. It starts right after MLS Cup. I mean, that's when the roster turnover starts. There's no waiting around in this league, and that for me is the best part. There's just not a dead period, to be honest with you.
Doyle?
Yep. I mean, for me, I just watch college basketball. As soon as MLS Cup is done, all about getting to March Madness.
And so Monday we'll be back. Trevor J. Moore has a question. We're going to talk Chicago Fire coaching.
We've got a bunch of Fire swag. So
we're
going to
send
him
some stuff, but we're going to talk Chicago Fire coaching move potential on Monday. So everyone who's Chicago Fire fan, send us your stuff for that.
Yep. Any teams that, hey, yeah, there's still stuff to play for, let us know what you think. Any teams still in it, let us know what you think. Who are you rooting for? What do you want to see happen? Where do you want to go for MLS Cup? You know how to get at us. At Extra Time Radio, extratime@mlssoccer.com. That's it. For the guys, Dave Goss, Matt Doyle, I am Andrew Wiebe. Watch all the games on SiriusXM. We'll see you on Monday.